This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751. Or send in your question through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. This week, we are going to be talking about common dating traps and common dating relationships problems that people might get caught up in, and how to avoid them, and if you can't avoid them, how to get out of them. Sound good, Dr. Lyle?
Sounds good.
Last week, we had a listener who emailed us, and he wanted to get some advice from Dr. Lyle and kind of get this beat your genes scenario here. So I'm going to read this email here. Dear Dr. Lyle, thank you for the great show today. Received a lot of insight, but I wanted to get a quick analysis from you guys. My background is I'm a 33-year-old male. I'm relatively fit, athletic, have 2 degrees. I'm above average intelligence. I'm currently working in education, and I would describe myself as an 8 out of 10. My girlfriend is 25. She also works in education. She's above average intelligence, and I would describe her as a 7 out of 10. Now, originally, for about 6 months, I pursued a casual mating strategy with this woman. I used virtually no resources on her and still received the benefit of sex and other relationship advantages. I had no interest in a relationship with her or anybody, as I had been pursuing an exclusively casual mating strategy for about 6 years. She, it seems to me, was comfortable with this arrangement. Somewhere along the line, we began to fall in love, and I decided to make a commitment to her. I make less money than she does and don't have many resources other than experience, but she is still willing to be in a long-term pair bond with me. I'm very happy with what we have right now, but I'm not sure this will have a future long-term. How would you explain the situation through the lens of evolutionary psychology, and what, if any, advice do you have for me?
Well, it's an interesting question and a relatively unusual situation. I don't have a lot of advice for people that are in good relationships and are all happy about it. So, hey, you know, go live and enjoy yourself. The advice comes when there's conflict and trouble, and then we try to analyze those issues from the smartest perspective we can in order to give better advice, in order to help people make better decisions. But right now, the decision is when you're in a good situation, you just live it. I think what may be a little bit puzzling and what gave rise to the question was that this is an unusual, relatively unusual situation where the male would be considered probably, through his own vision, he believes that he is higher mating status than the female, and yet he is finding himself. So we see in the pattern of the relationship started exactly as we would have expected, in that he was willing to sleep down, and she was very happy about sleeping up, and she was not putting any pair bond pressure on him because she was essentially pleased to be in the game. She was feeling over-rewarded in the situation. And we see further evidence of this. In other words, we're sort of taking this young man's assessment at face value, and there would appear to be some supporting evidence from what we're seeing in the fact that she makes more money, even though she's 8 years younger than he is, that she makes more money than he does, doesn't seem to have any problem with this, and was completely fine with being treated essentially as a casual mating partner for many months without having any significant investment on his part in her financially and apparently, in other words, the little emotional accoutrements that would make it look like a pair bond. He wasn't treating her that way, and yet she was fine with us. And this tells me that his assessment of their relative mate value in the open market has probably got some accuracy to it. Or else she's wrong, and it turns out that she just happens to be a very, very nice girl that is fine, you know, and is just very easygoing. But most people are not easygoing. Most people are actually negotiating with pretty fine pencil points when it comes to their mate value. So we're going to assume that he's right, because it would appear that that was the case. And so what we see is a situation where, for whatever interesting reasons, he sees her inner beauty, and he has now responded to it and has become it's become sort of integrated in with her overall mate value, and he loves this girl, which is fantastic. So obviously we expect that the following is true, that we expect that there's a little bit of pressure that is sitting inside the system if they go on a cruise and somebody that's a nine kind of starts flirting with him when his girlfriend slash wife isn't around. Like, what's going to happen to Mr. 8, okay? Also, what's going to happen to Mr. 8 if it turns out he's got any ambition and any significant ability, which he's got two degrees, I guess two master's degrees or whatever. So this is not a guy that is without some diligence. And if he rises in the world, it's a little puzzling that a 25-year-old in the same general area of education is out earning a 33-year-old. But maybe she just, I don't know how, why that this is true. But if he's got some ambition and he ends up actualizing that ability and does better financially, that could also put pressure on his psychology, as he might feel like he's got some options opening up that he doesn't have now. So this is all the little evolutionary perspectives that would be tickling through my brain if I was hearing a conversation about this. However, when it comes to advice, my attitude is great. This is the dream that females live. Females dream that they are going to be able to sleep up and through their inner beauty capture somebody that's fancier than they are, that happens to be. And usually they capture him through essentially being available as a casual mating strategy partner. In other words, not putting on any pressure, making it no hassle with respect to the sexuality. And then the guy finds himself all bonded up, because it turns out our guy was full of vasopressin. And by the time he had sex with a woman for a few months and she was a nice girl, he finds himself all woven up by his own biology. Fantastic. Okay. This is a wonderful situation for both people, and we wish him the very best of luck.
Wonderful. So I've often wondered whether or not this situation comes out of potential, like from male's laziness. Whereas, you know, if he was going to try to pursue an 8 or a 9, or, you know, I guess rarely a 10, he would have to put a lot of work into it. He'd have to start taking more risks to earn more resources, and he'd have to face a lot of rejection before he got an 8, 9, or a 10 who was willing to mate with him. And so,
yeah.
In my mind,
yeah.
Yes,
I think you put your finger on something that's very interesting. There were people in the world that were just as smart and had just as much artistic eye, and you know, and just as much natural savvy as Steve Jobs, but they didn't turn into Steve Jobs because they didn't have his ferocious ambition. And it's not their fault, and there's nothing in the world wrong with them, and they're a lot less crazy. And it turns out they probably had happier lives than Steve Jobs. So males differ tremendously in how hard they are willing to work for these very subtle reproductive advantages. And usually they're willing to work pretty hard, but there's also a cost-benefit analysis that sits underneath all actions and by all, you know, conscious entities. All animals are running cost-benefit analysis every second of their lives. And this is going to include the human male as he analyzes his mating landscape and his age and his prospects and the probabilities of what he can come up with. It's a fantastical, multidimensional and impossible to optimize matrix because you have no idea what's around the corner. You will find that the average male is, you know, sets the bar pretty high for himself. Now, we know that this is true, and let me tell you why. We know this is true because there's a thing called Bride Magazine, okay? I don't see anything out there that says Groom Magazine, not a single one. The only magazine you're going to find out there is called Bride Magazine. Why is it? Because to actually get a pretty good deal to commit to you and to get down on his knees and saying he's going to give this all his life and resources to you forever, that's a big damn deal to get to make that happen, okay? And so as a result, what we see is that why isn't that happening? Because males set the bar pretty damn high relative to what their feedback is as they bang around in the mating market. And so they calibrate their way through this market, and they tend to set the bar high. Our guy here in this situation is essentially saying, hey, I'm having a good life experience. And I have to tell you, he is fortunate to have found a situation where he, in fact, qualifies easily and with someone who's probably going to be very cooperative in this life with him because she feels over-rewarded. And if he can actually have great feelings, be attracted to her, then wonderful. It's just, it's of course the advice we would give everybody in the world if they would only take it. Gee, just sleep down 10% and you can get a fantastic human. But the truth of the matter is that's not how human beings are built. Human beings are built to negotiate for the last mutation on the table, to actually try to get their the very best and the fanciest mates that they can get. And so most of us simply do not have it as an option inside of our head to sleep down. This guy really didn't either. He discovered that he found his brain shift. He didn't actually, he wasn't going in with that as a plan. It happened to him. Turns out he has a lot more vasopressin in there than he even knew. And that's what that is. So the long story is, Jane Goodall, when she was studying a particular chimpanzee troop in Gombe, there was a big, strong male, athletic male named Humphrey in the troop. And it was very clear to her that Humphrey could have been alpha. And Humphrey never got off his ass. He just never became alpha. And he was alpha, a couple of different alphas tried to essentially recruit Humphrey by making females available to him during estrus and so on and so forth and trying to be his pal. And so Humphrey wound up being somebody's first lieutenant and had pretty good circumstances. And this all sounds like, you know, baloney, but actually they tracked very carefully the copulations of the different males with the different females throughout the chimp troop, and they could see that when the alpha actually was able to befriend Humphrey and essentially get his lieutenancy with respect to the other males, that Humphrey's mating went up, but it didn't go up as much as alpha's went up. So the two of them had this deal that they cut, but it was obvious to everybody observing this, I mean all the humans, that Humphrey could have been alpha without any problem. But think of Humphrey as a 110 IQ, big, strong guy that looks like a bouncer, and yet he doesn't even want to be Napoleon because he doesn't have Napoleon's chops. He doesn't have Napoleon's toughness. He's got a lot going for him, and he makes a great set of muscles, but he is not going to run the show, okay? And in some ways, our guy here, the way he's talking about his life situation, may have a certain amount of that characteristic in him. In other words, this is not a shit-kicking, I'm going to be alpha kind of a guy. This is a more even-keeled, not so highly testosteronized character that sounds like a very nice guy who's found a terrific girl that is just starry-eyed about him. And you know what? They've skinned the cat. They've accidentally beat the genes, and good for them. I hope it lasts forever.
So I guess so. It isn't really laziness. I guess that's a misnomer. It's just more of a certain set of circumstances in the genes that just causes a male to not be as status seeking, I guess, as somebody else.
Yes. So witness my psychology, so ferociously competitive and status seeking that I never qualify for anybody that I'd be interested in. Okay. And so here we are, you know what I mean, paddling around in the canoe by ourselves for the rest of our life. This is life. Okay. So this is just human beings have these individual differences, and there's simply, we certainly try to engineer our way around them, but usually we don't have a choice. So some people, in other words, in this case, it's better to be lucky than good. And so in this case, this guy did not do a lifetime of mate searching and trying to optimizing his abilities in the marketplace, didn't do a damn thing, okay? All he did was wandered into a casual mating situation, and turns out that her inner beauty tickled his vasopressin circuits, and he's skinning the cat. Good for him. All systems go.
Now, I've often wondered in situations like this, not with this particular listener, but in general, we've talked, and the whole nature versus nurture. I mean, we've talked before that most of this, or actually all of this, you said, is nature. It's just kind of how our genes are. And I've always wondered, well, let's say you've got, you know, one or two, like a male or female, whatever, and they're in a situation where they are being over rewarded or under rewarded by their parents or their sisters or their family or whatever it is. Would that lead to an eventual, say, you know, over competition or something when they get older, or under competition if they were under rewarded?
Oh, I see what you're saying. No. What you're referring to is, just so the listeners will be clarified, people believe that if you spoil their children, you're going to wind up with a spoiled adult. This is not true. Okay. You can spoil, if some kid's genes are for him to be very fair and very reasonable with other people and to be actually humble about his contributions and so forth, it doesn't matter how you spoil them. They're not going to become spoiled. In the same way, if you are tough and fair on a spoiled brat, and you know, really have good boundaries and all this kind of stuff, it's not going to make any difference. As soon as you let them out of the house into the real world, spoiled brat behavior is going to be emanating out of them. So there are certainly going to be probably some short and intermediate term effects if people are over rewarded for a while. So some guy that is over rewarded because for some strange reason, some prom queen was interested in him. And so for some reason he gets a little heady, you know what I'm saying? And then he dumps her because God knows, because she laughs funny, because he decides he can do better. And so then it turns out, you know, the next girl down the line, the next thing that he can get anywhere close to is a 7.5. And suddenly our boy goes through a transformation where his assessment of himself may have to drop a couple of notches. But notice that it does drop. Okay. So I think a better example of this would be an employee that is overcompensated and doesn't know it. So they're making $68,000 a year, and they're getting all uppity because their friend Susie just got a raise to $88,000 in some high related industry, and Susie pushed for it and got it. And so now they're like, well, I need to push and get it. Well, they push and then they get fired, okay? So now they're like, well, I think that's ridiculous. I'm worth $75,000. And they turn out in the open market, they're worth $48,000, okay? So they've got a bitter pill to swallow as they get recalibrated. And they could have easily been overcompensated in a situation for a while, and it gets them miscalibrated. So miscalibration happens, but personality change never happens. Okay? So you can be miscalibrated for a while, and to an outside observer who's being a very objection, you can look like you're narcissistic, because it's like, no, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You are not worth $75,000. And it's like, yes, I am. And it's like, well, no, you're not, okay? And it turns out that a honest, reasonable person could have been overcompensated and not know it and then look narcissistic, but they will not remain narcissistic as soon as they get their comeuppance, okay? So that's going to happen from time to time in human nature and in an individual's life. The same is also true on the other side, that a person who is actually fancier than they're being compensated for can actually find out to their great delight that they have actually underestimated what their market potential is, and they can euphorically then recalibrate up. Okay, so there's these things happen as market feedback is not entirely accurate. In other words, it's not entirely objective throughout the whole course of a person's lifetime. So there's going to be vicissitudes about what's going to happen with respect to feedback and one's sense of esteem in the marketplace and therefore expectations. But more or less, these things iron out over time, and sort of entitled, me-first, selfish, narcissistic people will be that way to their dying day. And people that are humble and pleasant and even-keeled, et cetera, will be like that to their dying day. And so, yeah, the feedback doesn't make the man.
Wonderful. This is an excellent segue because we were actually going to be talking about an article that I read on WebMD called Seven Solutions That Can Save a Relationship. And this is all about doing exactly what you just talked about is not possible.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it. Okay, so this is an article talking about that, you know, if you're a couple, it's pretty rare that you don't run into a few bumps in the road. And if you can recognize ahead of time what those problems might be, you can have a good chance of getting past them. So relationship problem number one, we're going to talk about the problem.
Wait.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Relationship problem number one. And the problem, and then we're going to go over the solution, and then we're going to get your opinion on the solution.
Got it.
Relationship
okay.
problem number
wait,
one.
Wait.
Communication.
Do I have to wait until you tell me what the problem is and their solution before I talk? Do I have to choke it down all the way to then?
Okay, feel free to interrupt.
Go ahead.
All right, relationship problem number one, communication. All relationship problems stem from poor communication. You can't communicate while you're checking your BlackBerry, watching TV, or flipping through the sports section. Problem-solving strategies. Oh, do you want to jump in there? Or is this...
I'm sucking my thumb vigorously.
All right, problem-solving. So here's how you solve this problem, apparently. You make an actual appointment with each other. If you live together, put the cell phones on vibrate, put the kids to bed, and let the calls go to voicemail. If you can't communicate without raising your voices, go to a public spot where you'd be embarrassed if anyone saw you screaming. Set up some rules. Try not to interrupt until your partner is done, and ban phrases like "you always" or "you never." And then use your body language to show you're listening, like don't doodle, don't look at your watch, don't pick at your nails, nod actively so the person knows you're getting the message, and then rephrase things if you need to. They have examples of this, but I'm sure you know you can't wait to give us your take.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right. First of all, the person that wrote this is an idiot, totally. They don't know anything about psychology, and they don't know anything about psychotherapy, and they've obviously never seen a couple in counseling, or if they did, they never helped anybody, okay? First and foremost, communication problems are almost non-existent in relationships, okay? It is the biggest lie that was ever told that the problems in human relationships, man-woman relationships, are communication. They are not communication. People communicate brilliantly, okay? They communicate through five channels of communication, like you can't miss it. They communicate in words, voice tone, body posture, facial expression, and touch. Like there's no missing what they're communicating, okay? Now, here's what people are saying. Like, let's suppose that I take a gunshot and I shoot my kneecap off, okay? And I'm in screaming agony and somebody says, oh, man, that's terrible. You got a bleeding, missing kneecap. You're in a lot of pain. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a lot of pain. Like, that's bad. It's bad to have that happen. That's a lot of pain. That's a bad thing. It's like, no shit, Sherlock. That's a really bad thing. What are we not talking about? We're not talking about the gunshot. See what I'm saying? The gunshot's what caused the problem. Here we're saying, oh, the communication, the communication, the communication. No, morons. It's what's being communicated is unpleasant, okay? So these two people, this couple, has conflicts. They have problems. The communication isn't causing the problems. The communication is evidence that there is a problem. Big difference, all right? So So let me give you an example. An example would be, for example, let's suppose that the husband and wife are having an argument about money because the husband's upset that the wife took Junior to the mall and spent $150 on a pair of sneakers. Okay? So let's just walk our way through this mess and see what's actually going on. So the husband's like pissed off, right? He works hard at his factory job. She's got a job too, and they've got a kid. And the wife is, you know, to the wife, this kid is her only genes that she's ever going to reproduce. So the son rises and sets on this child. All right. As far as she's concerned, all of the resources. Let's suppose these parents are 42. All right. And the kid's a 12-year-old little would-be basketball star. So as far as the wife is concerned, all the resources ought to go to the kid. The husband, meanwhile, he looks at the wife, and the wife's 40 pounds overweight, not interested in screwing her anymore, okay? Goes to work. You know, he's let himself go a little bit, but in his mind, he's thinking, well, now, wait a second. Is this over for me? Am I never going to have any hot romance again? You know what I'm saying? So he's thinking about how the resources, you know, he would like to actually keep some of those resources quietly for himself and maybe, you know, one day head to a strip bar and let off a little steam, all right? But he doesn't say this, of course. He doesn't even – it's illegal to mention that the wife has a weight problem, okay, because that's going to be a disaster. And so what's actually happening in here is they may be quite irritated with each other, and the husband's signaling his irritation about the money, and the wife is not misunderstanding this signal. The wife actually understands, wait a minute, I know what this is about. You want to take resources and direct them towards other women and other possible offspring, whereas I want to direct the resources towards our child. So screw you, okay? Because the message he's giving her is you're not that beautiful, and she hears that message loud and clear. Now, and the truth is he feels absolutely justified in his anger, because he's very frustrated because he's locked into this marriage and he wouldn't be there, you know, if they had a competitive process in the village, et cetera, et cetera. So in other words, he has lost the game of beat the genes, and they're both of them are in kind of a muddled mess. They both love Junior, but now it looks to it superficially, this looks like he's being cheap to his son, which he's not. It's just that he has other genetic fish to fry than his only son. And so all this is percolating down, and we go to the shrink's office, and we're going to talk about communication. It's like, oh, no, you're not. You can talk till the cows come home about, oh, you need to act like you're respectful. Don't, you know, make sure that your body language, that we look them in the eye. Let the other person finish till they speak. This is all nonsense, okay? What's happening underneath here is there's enormous conflicts in this relationship, and those conflicts are being signaled through multidimensional communication strategies on the part of both people. They know what's at the core. They don't actually raise those actual issues because they cannot resolve them. Those issues are actually too difficult for them to resolve. And so what happens is they signal the negotiation between them by, in this case, his angry about the $150. Okay? And she signals her irritation with him. And they dance around this problem that it's at the core of their life, and they will never resolve it, okay? But if we talk about what's wrong with our relationship, oh, well, we have hard communication. No, you don't. You've got brilliant communication, and both of you are tacitly agreeing that we're not going to actually peel back the layers far enough to get to the core issue because we know that we can't solve it. So this is BS 101. And psychotherapists are all trained at the appropriate culture, all the politically correct little messages about what is really wrong with relationships, and nobody has the guts to follow their own intuition. Psychotherapists do not have the guts. Even major league people that I won't name. When I read their works and I listen to what it is that they have to say, they are gutless, okay? They do not go to the core of what are actually the relationship dynamics are. That is the core of the dynamics, okay? when it comes to serious conflicts in a relationship, the core dynamic is that somebody, if there is a problem, it is being signaled, and those signals are being picked up. And the truth of the matter is, what the core dynamic is, somebody is percolating on the concept of defection. Okay? That's actually what is at the core. If that is not at the core, okay, if those two people are both really into the relationship, then if they have some arguments, everybody knows those arguments are relatively superficial, and there's nothing behind the curtain that we don't want to talk about, okay? It really is, I'm pissed about the $150. When that happens, those people don't have problems in their communication. They have occasional modest little flare-ups. Almost never in 25 years of doing couples therapy, almost never have I ever seen a time when there was actually a misunderstanding between those two people about what they were communicating. A couple of times when I actually uncovered it, it was fantastic. Okay? It was absolutely fantastic, where I actually ground the people through the communication process and we found out there was a misunderstanding and some hurt feelings behind some misunderstandings. Incidentally, okay, it's going to be rare for those to carry over very long before all of the other signals in the relationship that go on in a week or two don't signal to everybody how much they care and how much, you know, there was some turbulence that was short term and it's over. They might not ever really figure out what the problem was with that individual issue, but it turns out that the relationship itself, like essentially an immune system, heals the damn illness and gets right past it, and then they move on, okay? Because they send such obvious signals to each other during the days and weeks to follow about how much they value each other. Now, the fundamental issue is esteem dynamics, okay? The fundamental issue is at the core of how much one person values another person, and they will send esteem signals to communicate that. And when there are problems in relationships, the problems are not caused by communication. Communication is the symptom, not the problem. Big mistake. And that article is crazy. All right, next. Find out what else the
Well, we've
the
got
fan,
six
the
more to go, so I'm looking forward to
yeah.
this.
Good.
All right, well, moving right along. The next relationship problem is sex.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Even
what
partners,
does it say?
Even partners who love each other can be a mismatch sexually, says Mary Jo Fay, author of Please Dear, Not Tonight. She says a lack of sexual self-awareness and education worsens these problems, but having sex is one of the last things you should give up. The author says sex brings us closer together, releases hormones that help our bodies both physically and mentally, and keeps the chemistry of a healthy couple healthy. And here's her problem-solving strategies. Plan, plan, plan. The author suggests making an appointment, but not necessarily at night, maybe during the baby's afternoon nap or a before-work quickie. When sex is on the calendar, she says, it increases your anticipation. Why not have sex in the kitchen or by the fire or standing up in the hallway? Changing things up can make sex more fun. I'm all for this, but maybe not in the same planning situation as she is. Okay, learn what truly turns you and your partner on by coming up with a personal sexy list, says another psychotherapist, Allison Cohen. Swap the lists and create scenarios that turn both of you on. And if your sexual relationship problems can't be resolved on your own, Faye recommends consulting a qualified sex therapist to help you address and resolve your issues.
All right. Have I been silent long enough? I'm choking it down. I only had dinner recently, so this is not easy for me to listen to this. Okay. First of all, both what I've heard out of both these questions, I hate to say it, but this is very chick talk, okay? This is very chick talk. The first thing is chick talk, like it's all about our communication problems. Honey, it ain't about your communication problems. There's underlying conflicts and dynamics that are driving the problem. Then we're going to hear about sex problems have to do with, we need to change things up and blah, 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 okay? No, I don't think so. It's perfectly fine for a couple that is, you know, very happy in their relationship sexually to then play around and have some fun and do a few wacky and wild things and to sort of stretch their boundaries. No problem at all. But that is not the problem. People that are looking to solve problems by doing that are way out of bounds, not even close to the truth, okay? The truth is like this, that sexual dynamics really resolve around two fundamental classes of esteem signals. The male believes that the female is beautiful and sexually attractive. That is point one, okay? If that is not true, guess what? He's not very interested. Okay, so of course there are males that you know have very low standards, and so they could actually not think a woman is attractive and still have sex with her. But when we're talking about a feeling of being in love with somebody and being very connected to them, if the male does not feel like the female is beautiful to him, he's not going to be that into it. Okay. Number two, the female needs to feel like she admires who the hell this person is. Okay, so the female is her mind is actually more wrapped around who the male human is as a person. And so if she is not admiring of him as a person, then she is not going to be into this sexually for very long. Okay, it doesn't matter how he yells and screams and ties her up or pulls her pigtail or whatever. Okay, how talented he is with his tongue. This is a joke, okay? This goes nowhere for very long at all unless she admires who it is that he is a person. If she doesn't admire who he is as a person, this is done, okay? She is out of it. Now, she will send this signal back. You talk about not tonight, dear. I'll tell you not tonight, dear. Not tonight, dear is I don't admire the human being. Then you can forget it. Okay, that's a female's perspective. Now, we got a problem when it turns out they're married and they got a couple of kids and they're walked into this thing together. Now we got a big problem on our hands. Now, the second of all, the male is not finding the female attractive. Guess what? Swinging from the chandeliers and putting on a bunch of negligee isn't going to do a damn thing, okay? I don't care what you wear, how much lipstick you put on. If he doesn't find you attractive now for whatever reason, he doesn't find you attractive. You're done, okay? This is not going to be fixable. So once again, these authors are skimming along the politically correct surface of these problems, and they're not understanding the fundamental core dynamics that sit underneath them. Incidentally, I don't want to give the impression that this is clean and only one direction. It is very possible for females to actually admire a male but actually find him physically abhorrent because he's 50 pounds overweight and he wasn't that way 7 years ago when they met. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't just go one direction in this way, but I will tell you there's a very strong tendency, and what I'm giving you are very, very strong stereotypes about how it is that man-woman dynamics actually work. This is at the core of man-woman dynamics. If you do not have that esteem dynamic between those two people, you have a relationship that is headed to being dead below the waist if it isn't already. And there's not a damn thing in the world that any of these prescriptions are going to do to help it, okay? You need to address those core dynamics, and if you don't address them, you will fail. I had a woman, there's a very prominent woman in the world that very self-confident, was in a marriage that the husband hadn't wanted her in years, okay? And she was an older woman, Then I suggested to her that the reason was that she was overweight. And I explained to her that males are designed by nature to look at the S-curve from the male female torso down to the side of their thighs and essentially looking for fertility cues. And that women even her age, which is over 50, could absolutely show evidence of those fertility cues if they lost weight. Okay? So anyway... She went to the trouble of actually losing significant weight, and she let me know she'd lost about 20 or 25 pounds. And she told me that suddenly what happened was is her husband, when he would hug her, he would actually – his hands were wandering down along her hip line and to feel her up, and he hadn't done that in 5 or 6 years. And it rekindled their sexual relationship. No communication, no bullshit. Okay, no swinging from the chandeliers, no makeup, nothing. What happened is that for people to think that this is this tentative and that we have to dress it up and talk about it and schedule it for God's sakes, remember what your biology is telling you. Your biology is telling you to mate repetitively 2 or 3 or 4 times a week in order to get genes to the next generation. You don't need to stoke this thing. And if you're needing to stoke it, there's a problem. Okay, that partner's not that appealing. Okay, so this is not something that, you know, that any animal needs to be coached in, and there's no reason. Now, let me point something else out that they did talk about very earlier. Some comment in this was insightful. And that is that there are people that are not very sexually experienced. They may not have been very attractive, or they may be inherently a little clumsy, or they may not be inherently very intuitive. In other words, there's people that are actually they can, you know, by their 30th birthday, they can be still not very with it. Okay, and that's no crime. And so there can be some learning to be done. Probably the one communication question that is worth asking a partner, if you have one, is to ask them how they like to be touched, if you can't figure it out, okay? And sometimes what you will get from them is you might get some really interesting information. It takes some courage, a little bit of courage, to ask that question. In other words, I want people to know that it is a completely legitimate question to ask. There isn't one way to get a woman to orgasm, and there isn't one way that a guy likes things. Guys aren't guys and girls aren't girls. The truth is there's considerable individual variation in people's sexuality, and so therefore some questioning, even explicit questioning, not just nonverbal testing, some explicit questioning among people that are very close, that really care about each other, is really can be very worthwhile. So that is one point in the world where I would say communication can be worth doing and worth doing well.
Wonderful. And now, along this same vein, I read a couple of excerpts from a book a few months ago called Married Man Sex Life. And this was all approaching this exact issue, but from a man's perspective. Because obviously this is a problem, right? People get into dead bedroom situations when they're married. But what this book was basically saying was to start giving cues to your partner that you're the alpha, that you're the he-man. And so what it suggested was a couple of the examples that they had was that, you know, a man's been married to his wife for, say, you know, 10, 20 years. The sex is dried up. But in the middle of that, what the guy ends up doing is he tries to be more helpful. So he does more dishes. He does more cleaning. He kind of eases the load for his wife because he thinks that's the problem. And what this book is actually saying is, no, that's not actually the problem. It's not that you're not doing enough housework. It's that you're taking on a submissive role. And so,
that is actually very interesting. That is one of the more interesting and intelligent things that I've heard, even though I'm sure it's largely bullshit, but at least somebody is trying to use their brain. Okay. Now the truth of the matter is this once again goes down to the notion. I actually have a phrase that I would describe how relationships go. People believe that, and this goes so upside down to the way that I think about everything else in life. So this is a little bit of a mismatch for wording than what people have maybe heard me talk about before, if anybody's listened to me. When it comes to goal setting in life, what's most important is the process and not the outcome. In other words, it's how it is that you do it. Do you do things in the right way, and do you do things to the best of your ability? If you do, then whatever the hell the outcome is, the outcome. And we may not get the job, and we may not get the girl, and we may not get the Academy Award. But the truth of the matter is, if you do things well and you do them in the right way, you will earn self-esteem. And you will – so the process by which you do this is actually more important than the outcome. Now, when it comes to relationships – I will use the same words, but I'm talking a little bit of a different language, but a very key concept. And that is, the process has nothing to do with it. Because the truth of the matter is that people naturally and brilliantly vet each other for what they look like, how they move, what their personalities are, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? They do this, and it either ignites and sustains love psychology or it does not. So the process has nothing to do with it. So this, if this guy is acting, it's absurd, quite frankly, whoever said this, that the notion is to act like an alpha around your house and order the bitch around and slap around a couple of times and let her know you're not going to do shit. See what I'm saying? Like, as if that somehow that she's going to be weak in the knees as if she just ran into a young Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
There
no.
is
So
no
here's what he
way that
says.
she's. Yeah,
Yeah,
go
here's
ahead.
what he says. He says not to do that. He says, go back to the hobbies that you did when you first met your wife. Because what inevitably happens is, and I'm sure this happens with the opposite sex as well, but what inevitably happens in these examples was the man marries his wife, and then just work takes over. He gains extra weight. He stops going to the gym. He stops doing his hobbies, all the things that made his wife admire his character. So what the author's suggesting is go back to those things. Have things that you have hobbies for. Let your wife admire your character again instead of just looking at you as an ATM machine that works and just puts money into her and the house and the children.
Well, there's a, except that I have to tell you that if you work hard at your career and you make money and you put money into the wife and children, then the female recognizes the character that it takes to do that. You know what I'm
Okay.
saying? So it's not
Okay.
like, no, this is a misunderstanding on this guy's part. And
Okay.
so he's not actually understanding that the female is very sophisticated and actually looking through the person's life choices and processes. And is observing that guy's character in action. Okay? So it's a very superficial thing to say, oh, we'll go back to the way before because that's what she was attracted to. No, she was attracted to the diligence and hardworkingness and ambition that took you to be the leading scorer on your little intramural basketball team. You know what I'm saying? She was, that's what she was, she didn't give a damn about the fact that you played basketball. She gave a damn about the diligence and competitiveness that was involved. Okay? Why did she care about that? Because she cared about village politics and whether or not you would rise in hierarchies and be able to gather political and material resources for her in the village. Okay? That's why she even had that admiration chip in the first place. Okay? So this is again looking at the superficial surface. In this case, it's the same kind of mistake, except much more sophisticated than the other bozos who had ridiculous ideas. Okay, so this is, yeah, this is, but this is all. However, the truth of the matter is that people's attraction and assessment of their partners are multidimensional. They are physical, and they are mental and psychological as well. And so, there's both mental and physical processes. So if you are some guy and you are kind of out of shape and you have turned yourself around, you know, don't think that this isn't registering inside of your partner's head. It very well might. And if she seems like you are less sexually appealing and she's saying, not tonight, dear, okay, let me tell you something. There could be excellent reasons why that is true. One of them might be that you're not in good shape. One of them may be that it's exceedingly unlikely that the reason is that you're being overly accommodating to her in the conflicts of interest over time and energy in that household. That, I think, is complete crock.
Okay, wonderful. Okay,
Very
you ready?
unlikely to be true.
Ready for the next one? We've got a few more to
Right. Can't
go.
wait.
Okay, relationship problems about money.
Yeah.
So, money problems can start even before the wedding vows are exchanged. They can stem, for example, from the expenses of courtship or from the high cost of a wedding. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling recommends that couples who have money woes take a deep breath and have a serious conversation about finances. So, problem-solving strategies for this is to be honest about your current financial situation. If things have gone south, continuing the same lifestyle is unrealistic. Don't approach the subject in the heat of battle. Instead, set aside a time that's convenient and non-threatening, and acknowledge that one partner might be a saver and one partner might be a spender, and agree to learn from each other's tendencies. Don't hide income or debt. Don't blame, construct a joint budget, and decide which person will be responsible for paying the bills, and then allow each person to have independence by setting aside money to be spent at his or her discretion, and then decide upon short-term and long-term goals. And then talk about caring for your parents as they age and how to appropriately plan for their financial needs, if needed.
Blah, 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 blah. Now we're way wandered off into the weeds. Okay, now let's talk about some things, because there's elements of here that are useful, and yet there's a fundamental concept that is that's important for people. The one thing is that we know there's a reason why people are not hired in pairs in jobs. Like, you don't go to a job with your friend and they say, okay, well, both of you are going to do this job, and then you're both together, you're going to make $60,000, and then you guys divide it in half. No, but that's not how it works in the world. You go get a job. You get the job for $30,000. See what I'm saying? Your friend gets some other job. She makes 28 or she makes 36. Everybody's got their own individual job, and they've got their own individual income. Because the truth is that human beings are not communists. That's not how they work. Okay? There's a reason. You can imagine what life would look like if we said, "Oh, well, we're gonna all hire you in blocks of 100." Okay? Okay? Well, you can do some of that. It's called union labor, and you'll actually see people disincentivized to do their best. And there's reasons for it, and it can half-ass work, and but it's problematic, and that's why you got a National Labor Relations Board and all kind of other problems. But the bottom line is, you won't see this in a real estate office. You won't see this in a sales job, okay? It's going to be, you know, your incentives are tied to what it is that you do. Suddenly, when you become a couple, suddenly we're all going to, you know, we're going to, quote, work equally hard, pile all the money in the middle, and then we're going to spend it together. This is a fundamentally communistic situation, and it's laden with trouble. Okay, now, are there people that can do it? Yes. Are there relationships where the people can do this? No question. And those people, you know who they are, and they don't have a problem, and I'm not going to give them any advice. But in principle, the advice that I have for people is that you keep your own money separate. Okay, so let's suppose, for example, that you've got a situation where the guy earns $10,000 a month and the girl earns $2,000 a month. So of course we don't say, well, everybody's going to pay, you know, $1,000 a month for rent. You pay $1,000, I pay $1,000. No, that isn't how you would do it. What you want them to be is you want them to be at the same socioeconomic status, right? That's how you're actually going to want them to be. But they still have their own money. Okay, so for example, so it may be that he's going to pay all the rent, and he's going to pay for the cars, he's going to pay for everything. And now, so he's got about $2,000 a month left over to spend, and she's got $2,000 that she earns to spend. Now, that's fair. Okay, and if they're in a relationship and they love each other, they both are sitting now at exactly the same socioeconomic status. But they've got as much of their own money as we can muster. Okay, it may be that if they live fairly frugally, he may give her another $1,000, and she's got her $2,000 that she earns plus $1,000 from him, and now they each have $3,000 a month discretionary income. Now they do with that discretionary income whatever it is that they want. Okay, that's how you want the grant, to the extent that it isn't directly threatening to the relationship. If somebody chooses to do it, so they do. If the guy goes and spends his $3,000 on strippers, you know, I think this is going to wind up being a problem, why he's so motivated and why he would do that. But if he wants to go play golf with his buddies at a high-end golf course that costs $250 a round, we do not want her saying, well, what's that? See what I'm saying? If she wants to go take $1,000 and buy a pair of really fancy shoes at Nordstrom's, we don't want him saying, what the hell? See what I'm saying? We don't want them having conflicts over their consumption. They will have conflicts over their consumption if the concept is we pile the money in and then everybody spends it until it's gone, basically. That's a problem, okay, because now every dollar she spends is a dollar I don't get to spend, and it creates a dynamic tension and a conflict of interest in them in that relationship. So however it is that you figure it out, you want the two people to be at the same socioeconomic status level, and then you want them to have their independent money, okay? From that independent money, think how this changes the relationship. If I'm a saver, then I might save my whole $3,000 one month. See what I'm saying? Then also, and when it comes to times to give gifts, when you give somebody a gift and you actually give her a $500 coat, then she, it didn't come out of the community pot. It came out of your money, and it's a gift that you gave her, and it means a lot more that way. Okay? How many times have some dad, like, look, kids, don't buy me anything, or look, honey, please don't buy me anything? Like, I you know, in my first, I was married a long time ago, and I told my wife, she said, well, what do you want for Christmas? I said, deposit receipts. Give me deposit receipts and put them in a box. That's what I want to see when I open up my Christmas present. Okay? The, that, you know, it became a running joke. I said, I told her, hey, never got the deposit receipt. All right? So this is how we, you know, if finances are conflictual, which very often they are, but sometimes they aren't. There will be people listening to us tonight that will say, well, we just don't have any problems. And that's because they happen to see eye to eye so well that it isn't a problem. But for people for whom it is a problem, they're not saving money. There's irritation between the two of them. There's a little bit of a frustration when one of them spends money on something. People that are doing that are adding conflict into the relationship and are eroding potentially their love. Okay, they are better off, quote, sitting down as is suggested here and having some really straight conversations around some very, very straightforward parameters. Equal socioeconomic status, and after that, we each have our own money. Okay, and sometimes that, you know, that's going to involve one partner subsidizing the other, but sometimes not particularly. But one way or the other, that has to be fixed so that everybody's got their independent money. People are
Wonderful.
Much more frugal when it's their own money. They
yeah.
are much more responsible with their own money than what they are with the group money, okay? And we have a hard time. It seems unfriendly to make the money independent. And, of course, we're not going to make the house bills and so things like that independent. But, by God, your discretionary income, that should be independent, and it should be totally independent.
Yeah, and it seems like the minute you add someone else, whether it's a romantic partner or anybody else to your money pool, it becomes a zero-sum situation
yes.
where if they take something out, you lose. And if you
no,
take something
no
out, they lose.
Oh, no question. It's absolutely, and if people are particularly, if they're one of them or both are very agreeable people, this gets to be a problem, you know. And you just sort of let it go and let it go and let it go, and then you never get a deposit receipt for Christmas.
See, I would think that if two disagreeable people were together, then it would create a problem because they would be constantly taking
oh, yeah.
more than their fair share.
That too. But all it takes is, yeah, I mean, whatever the combination is, there's a lot
okay.
of bad combinations, okay,
okay.
When you have that situation. That's not a situation you want.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.